This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
You're listening to the What's Brewing Show, part of the What's Brewing Show Network, with your hosts, Jake Merrifield, Bill Shirley, Jamal Artis, and Mike Regalado, bringing you anything and everything UCLA sports. And now, it's time for the What's Brewing Show.
Well, hello, and welcome to WB2, the LA Bowl game review. UCLA defeats Boise State 35-22 in a nice little comeback victory as they were trailing at halftime 16-7. But the Bruins looked good in the second half behind Ethan Garbers and the emotion that he injected into the team. All of a sudden, they started tackling better. All of a sudden, they looked a lot more motivated. And all of a sudden, the Bruins started putting up points. This was a familiar story for this season, and we will get to all that in a minute. But this is, of course, the What's Bruins Show on the What's Bruins Show Network. This is the last of the football post games that will be coming to you for 2023. I am shedding a tear because it will be all the way until next August, September, before we have something else like this. I love the college football season when it's here, no matter how bad it goes, and I always miss it when it's gone, no matter how bad it goes. And so that's where we're at right now. No more Bruin football for 9 months or so. And however you feel about Bruin football, that is a bad thing for people who like to watch, college football and the Bruins especially. So, here we are. The What's Bruin Show will continue to record in the off season. Of course, we'll cover basketball season as well as whatever other sports that seem notable. All things and everything Bruin sports is what the tagline is, of course. You can email us at whatsbruinshow@gmail.com. We also are on Twitter at whatsbruinshow. And, of course, there's a bunch of great shows on One Great Feed here. We also have West Coast Bias with Jamal. He'll be publishing a lot more, I believe, because, of course, the Dodgers have Ohtani and the Lakers look pretty good and the Kings are around and all that good stuff. So it looks like it'll be a good year for West Coast Bias, I suppose, now that Jamal is settled in Arizona.
Well, you're just all about the West Coast Bias. You don't like the East Coast.
And the other show I know will be coming to you infrequently, but it certainly will be some in the next month or so because we're going to be recording very soon, is The Bare Minimum.
The Bare Minimum.
With my daughter Megan and I as we talk about her career at UC Berkeley and all that entails.
Yeah, Berkeley is actually really great.
She's having a good time, and we appreciate that. So we'll be coming back to you with an episode probably the next week or so. This is, of course, an independent podcast covering UCLA sports and kind of a variety show beyond that. Of course, Mike does work for Bro. But that's separate from what we are. We are an independent UCLA-themed podcast, and we've been going for about 10 years now, and we'll hopefully be going for another 10 years or more. And part of the way that we do that is through your support. We don't ask for much, just a couple bucks a month if you feel like it.
$2.
And, of course, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/whatsbruinshow or just whatsbruinshow.com. And you can also support us for a little more than
$2
on our Substack, whatsbruin.substack.com. There will be some articles on the Substack periodically. I wrote a nice one that was very predictive about the defense this year, I believe. There's going to be a fun article coming out in the next week or two about where the Bruins land academically going into the Big Ten. And I'll give you a little hint. It's very, 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 very high. Anyway, that should go without saying, but maybe higher than we thought. Who knows? But we appreciate all of your support. We're not trying to do anything other than really just keep the show afloat as we go through this. Mike has a day job. I have a day job. The other contributors, Bill, Jamal, they have day jobs as well. So we are just kind of trying to make this to where we're not spending a bunch of money doing it. Rather, we can just do it and put it out there for you all to enjoy. So any of your help is appreciated, and we will try to put in some bonus content there from time to time to hopefully keep you guys engaged. You also can get access to the Slack channel, which is a fun way to talk with other Bruin fans if you are a subscriber on the Patreon or on the Substack. So thank you very much, and we appreciate your support. Also, you can engage with us on the What's Bruin hotline. We have some hotline calls tonight, 805-399-4WBS, Second Rain of Troy. That is another way in which you can engage with the show, and generally we will play those on the Tuesday show or during the football season. We play them in this show, in the postgame show, which is what's going to happen today. So with that in mind, let's get on with the postgame. UCLA over Boise State, 35-16 in the LA Gronk Bowl, which I think was a nice, successful event.
Take that, UCLA football cynics.
I'm happy that UCLA won.
Bruin doomsday fans getting humiliated.
Fight, fight, fight!
Okay, let's just get this out of the way right at the top. Regardless of how you feel about UCLA football, how the football team is being run, what the administration for the football team is, Chip Kelly as the head coach, all of that being said, right? Something I tweeted out at halftime when the Bruins were down 16-7, and it appeared that Boise State had the motivational edge in this game, and they certainly were playing like that on the field, getting a lot more scoring opportunities and not cashing in on them, of course, and the defense kind of missing a couple tackles and all that. Not playing poorly, but certainly it appeared that they were, you know, not playing at their top level, and there were a couple missed tackles that led to some scoring opportunities for Boise State, and it just seemed like as the game went on and UCLA was not scoring the ball, it felt like it was, this game was slowly going over to the Boise State side, right? And going to halftime, and there was certainly, they had the momentum. And then all that changed in the second half. College Selene was leading them on a nice drive, but then when garbage came in, it certainly flipped all the way. I think they both deserve credit for that, but the offense certainly got it turned around. UCLA pretty much routed them in the second half, and that was great. But getting back to however you feel about UCLA football and Chip Kelly and Martin Drummond and just UCLA in general right now, you know, and how if you feel that they're going the wrong way, this bowl game, it didn't seem like it had anything to do with anything in regards to any of those decisions. And what I tweeted at halftime was, by all accounts, this game has no impact whatsoever on Chip Kelly's coaching status, so we should all just root for a nice comeback right now, and with a hashtag Go Bruins. And I felt that way then, and I definitely feel that way now. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying this bowl game result. I don't think, even if you are down on UCLA football as a whole, even if you aren't going to renew your season tickets next year, even if you're not going to contribute to whatever until, you know, Chip Kelly is gone or however you feel about that, right? That didn't really make a whole lot of difference in this bowl game. And there were a lot of fun performances in this bowl game that made it fun to watch UCLA football for a Saturday afternoon. And so if you do rob yourself of that by being angry about it, well, then, I mean, you know, you only get so many of these games to kind of have fun with. And this was one that was fun. And I know it's hard for people to separate it. I was sitting at the game with someone who was super, super high on Chip when they hired him and super, super low on Chip now. And, you know, so much so that he wrote a song when he showed up celebrating him. And he wrote a song at the end of this year saying he needed to be fired. And yet we were both at the bowl game together having a blast. And that is none other than Godfather Jim Bendat and his lovely wife, the Saint Marilyn. And we had fun at the bowl game. It was a good opportunity to just go enjoy a game of UCLA football. And I think that was something that was a nice little blip in an otherwise kind of stormy and you know, at best, murky situation, and at worst, thoroughly pessimistic situation for, you know, UCLA football right now, and I'll acknowledge that. And, towards the end of the podcast, after you get done kind of celebrating what this bowl game was, we're definitely going to get into some of the counterpoints of, like, where we're at now, you know, because the bowl game is over. Like, my supposition is we should have enjoyed this bowl game. Right? This was a fun opportunity for UCLA to play a bowl game in its hometown in a big, giant, wonderful stadium that's closer to the campus than they normally travel for all their home games. It's a whole other issue, right? But this was a fun opportunity. And all I would say about the LA Bowl is, in any circumstance during the Pac-12 era when the LA Bowl has been active, going to the LA Bowl would have been a disappointment in and of itself, right? So if you paint any scenario in which UCLA is going to the LA Bowl in the last 3 years, right, and you were someone who said, like, oh, well, they have the LA Bowl. It's the Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. It's the Gronk Bowl. And, oh, maybe UCLA can go there somewhere sometime. And if they do, then I'll go to it, right? If you would play that thinking out, that would mean that they had a pretty shitty season based on where we wanted them to be. Because to get into the LA Bowl, you had to be pretty far down the list of Pac-12 finishers, which means that they would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 wins, 8 wins, 6 wins or something, right, to get into that LA Bowl. So if you ever were, geez, I hope UCLA goes to the LA Bowl so I can go, well, it's probably going to be during a disappointing season, so you shouldn't let that stop you. And so hopefully you didn't. And it didn't seem like that did stop a lot of people, because UCLA actually had pretty good representation out at the bowl game. Obviously, this is a minor tier first day bowl game. It's not a big game by any stretch of the imagination. However, when you showed up to the stadium, you looked around, the Bruins side was pretty darn filled up. And it was, you know, there's a lot of fun little rigmarole going around in the stadium. I think that having Gronk be the mascot of this game, and there's really no other way to describe it. And, you know, if you weren't there and if they didn't show it on TV, at one point he had a can of whipped cream that he was spraying into his mouth and coating his body with. He was doing the DJ fist pump. He was racing a dog during halftime or the third quarter or something. He really was the mascot of this game and the face of the game. And I think that is fun for a minor bowl game that doesn't mean anything. Having Gronk involved was a good thing. I think it really did add some fun to the event, no matter how the football was being played. You know, they kept going to him various times during the game when you're in the stadium, and it was a good time. I mean, look, I've been a UCLA football fan since the mid-90s, since I went there. And so, you know, in the last 20 years, I've been to a lot of crappy bowl games. Silicon Valley, Las Vegas, San Francisco, and, you know, the Holiday Bowl, you know, I would elevate that as a, you know, that's a bowl game that people actually aspire to get into. So I'm not going to count that in this list. But of all the crappy bowl games that the Bruins have been to in the last couple of decades, this was by far the most fun to attend for, you know, all, you know, not just for the game itself, which they actually came back and won, which made it a fun time. But even if it would have just been a dreadful effort and they would have played the second half like they played the first half, we all would have been kind of disappointed and just pointed and looked and said, yeah, see, look, this is what Chip Kelly has wrought. Even with that being said, it would have been a fun time at the bowl game. There were entertaining things going on other than the football. So as far as the LA Bowl goes, and I can't speak to the two or three before this one, but this was a successful event, and I can't think of any other way to categorize it. You know, fun location, fun event, and the window dressing was very good based on, you know, considering the level of prestige for this particular bowl, which, you know, there is none. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show last Tuesday, but I was able to get really cheap suite tickets for the game, and it turned out to be a wonderful bargain. It was like, you know, $20, $30 less than what they were selling for on the UCLA site just for the main, you know, the general admission seats or whatever. And so me and the Godfather and my son Malcolm and the Saint, we all rolled into SoFi in style. I highly recommend those seat tickets. If you can ever find cheapy ones for Rams or Chargers, probably not as cheap as I got them considering it was the LA Bowl. But it was a blast. It was really fun to sit up there, and a great way to watch the game as well. And it was fun to be able to go with Malcolm. And I think it was only like his second or third college football game, I believe. And I think he did have a good time, especially by the end of it. We had some lovely in-game visitors to the suite. The Godfather's good buddy and media star Steve Futterman popped in, and it's always good to see him. Of course, anytime you see him, you have to start the conversation with some form of FSC, because that's the only language he understands, which, you know, I can appreciate that. And also, none other than Mike Regalado from Bruin Report Online.
Hi, bro.
He stopped by and gave the Godfather the program materials for the game, which was nice. So it was good. A fun time was had by all, and overall a successful event as far as just the bowl game as it was. Now, as far as the play on the field, you know, number one, the story of the game was the quarterback play. Colin Schley starts the game, plays the entire first half, and then I think the first drive of the second quarter or the second half is when he got injured, right, as he was driving down the field. But we were all kind of flummoxed and puzzled initially when he starts the game, because, you know, but it wasn't exactly a complete surprise. A friend of the show, Chris Osgood, up in the press box, spotted that Schley was taking most of the warm-up throws and snaps before the game. And at that point, we didn't really know what it meant. But then once Schley started the game, it was kind of just, okay, I guess Schley's starting this game. And you think about, like, why that might be. Well, the story we got from Chip and what they were going with in the postgame was that Garbers didn't quite fill up to playing. And so they decided to let Schley give it a go. I think that's probably not exactly the whole truth of the situation. I think maybe there was a lot more to do with the fact that Colin Schley transferred here and maybe didn't get exactly as much run during the full season as maybe, you know, Chip had planned or what anybody had liked. And maybe this is kind of a bone thrown to Schley. And maybe, you know, Garbers coming off the injury, and they just kind of said, well, you know, look, Garbers is a little dinged up, and Schley, you know, hasn't played as much as we'd like, so let's just give him a shot and let him roll with it. And by all accounts, it didn't look like Garbers is going to come into the game at any point in this game if Schley hadn't gotten hurt. And that doesn't mean that the Bruins wouldn't have won this game. There's certainly the offense opened up dramatically once Garbers enters the game, and I think it's clear that Garbers is the best quarterback that was on the UCLA roster this year, hands down, no questions asked. But Schley was leading a drive to get the score within, you know, 16-14. You know, they were inside the 10-yard line by the time he got hurt. But he's obviously limited in what he can do, right? Because he's not very good at throwing the ball. There's just no two ways about it. And the Bruins' aerial attack is severely limited when he is, out there. To me, in the first half, one of the things that was as glaringly clear to me is that the Bruins had such an edge with Kyle Ford and J. Michael Sturdivant on the outside, and they had zero way to exploit it, right? And even with Garbers in there, it wasn't something that that they were able to do at will, kind of. But, you know, you saw finally, you know, after, you know, basically being dormant for the entire, you know, Pac-12 season, we finally got a deep pass to J. Mike at the end of the game, and Kyle Ford was involved in the game, scored his first damn touchdown as a Bruin, for Christ's sakes. Just absolutely ridiculous. So having Garbers in there just kind of opened up the offense and allowed the Bruins to dominate this Mountain West team like they should have, right? And if Garbers had started the game, this probably would have been a big giant blowout, which if you looked at both these teams before the game and said, well, if they both play good games, what's the outcome going to be? Well, that would be it, right? The Bruins are a better team, more talented team, hands down, than the team across from them in Boise State this particular year. You know, and there's no arguing that. And we saw that in the second half once they were kind of fully operational. Now, I don't want to belabor the game too much, but I do want to get into a little bit of the specifics. And, you know, let's talk about, you know, kind of a tale of two halves, right? In the first half, honestly, this was two teams that were very, very similar playing each other. Teams that were playing with quarterbacks that weren't exactly able to exploit the other team through the air. Teams that were pretty tough and hard-nosed defensively, and teams that really wanted to run the ball. And if you look at the first half stats, it really was exactly that. The Bruins ran for 100 yards on 12 carries. Boise State ran for 126 on 24 carries, and that kind of shows you that the Bruin defense was still here to play, right? Both teams threw for about 70 yards, 73 for the UCLA, 76 for Boise State, and it was very, very futile effort, throwing the ball a lot in the first half of this game. That changed for the Bruins the second half, of course. But, you know, really, when you talk about the first half, Boise State was on top 16-7, and it was like mostly three field goals and a touchdown. And they really did have the motivational edge in this game because the Bruin offense just was not able to move the ball consistently, because every time they needed a pass to move the chains or something, it was either dropped. Logan Loya didn't end up with a catch in the first half, but he certainly had a couple drops. And there were some other drops too. And a lot of it too was because of the throws from Slee, right? It just wasn't very effective. So the number one play for the Bruins was Colin Slee somehow getting loose and breaking loose on a run. He had a 50-yard run in the first half, which was pretty cool, and got him into scoring position. Most of their yards came on that one drive. And even, you know, running the ball, T.J. Harden, you know, he looked okay in spots. But in the first half, he was only averaging 3 yards a carry, right? So the big difference, the only really thing that the Bruins had going in that first half was that big run from Slee, which then they ended up kind of improvising and getting the touchdown to Habermill, which was a great play by Slee, but still it was kind of like a little bit of garbage, right? So the Bruins were really lucky to get that seven, I think, because, you know, God knows what would have happened if they would have tried to kick a field goal. I certainly was not optimistic about any of that. And on the Boise State side, they just kept grinding and grinding and grinding, and the UCLA offense struggling put the UCLA defense in bad positions. I mean, I think Boise State got the ball at midfield or almost at midfield at least two or three times, and Boise State converted that into points. Even though it was just field goals for the most part, they finally broke through towards the end of the second quarter, I believe, with a touchdown. But, you know, you couldn't point to the UCLA defense and say they weren't playing well. But this was another one of those games, like ASU, like Stanford, the first half of this game, where you could just see the defense was playing hard, and obviously down men too, right? There was no Latu Latu there. There was the back end was very depleted, but they were still playing hard. And however, as the game went on, it was getting clearer and clearer that Boise State was gaining momentum and gaining strength, and, you know, looking to play a little bit harder, and UCLA was kind of losing a little bit of that. And it's, like I said, it's the same game we saw on the road at Arizona too, where towards the end of that game, UCLA, the defense just kind of started to break down. And towards the end of this half, UCLA's defense started to break down. And they gave up a couple big plays off of broken tackles. And it was, you know, going into the half, it wasn't looking good, certainly, but because Boise State hadn't been able to convert more of those points into touchdowns, they had to settle for field goals, UCLA was still plenty within striking distance. You know, and so then they come out in the second half, UCLA, the defense gets a stop, which is good. You know, they kept playing hard, and then UCLA starts driving down the field, and you get another big, big run from Colin Slee, but he comes up lame on it at the end, inside the 20-yard line, I believe, and then Garbers comes into the game. And it was really funny. Mike is bragging because he said he called the 21 points.
Mike Regalado.
And on our text thread, you know, Bill's talking shit the whole game, by the way, because he's in Santa Barbara drinking wine and somehow watching the game. I don't know what TV he was watching it on. But he's been telling me, like, don't go to the games and da-da-da-da-da, you know, and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, well, why are you even watching the game then, bro? But he was watching the game. And so on our text thread, I just said, you know, look, Garbage is going to come in here and drop 30. And my bad, he only dropped 28 points, by the way. When Garbage got into the game, I don't know, in my opinion, like I said, it was clear that they were giving Schley the opportunity to play the game because the bowl game really, in the big scheme of things, didn't mean anything. So it's like, why not let the guy that's been in your program for a year and, you know, give him a shot to play a little bit, especially if Garbage is a little bit dinged up. But when Garbage got in and it was clear that he wasn't actually really hurt and that he could play, to me, I just thought that was going to open up the game enough for the Bruins to really exploit a team that they had a clear advantage over, right? And once the Bruin offense became kind of fully operational, then that's your tale of two halves, right? And all of a sudden, the Bruins put up 28 points. When going away, Boise State kind of had a little garbage touchdown towards the end there. But, that was it, right? And then all the Bruin fans were kind of celebrating at the LA Bowl, those of us that were there, celebrating this very, you know, inconsequential but fun bowl game. And, that was a lot of fun. You know, and I know I said it before, but I'll say it again. There wasn't a scenario in which UCLA plays in the LA Bowl that wouldn't have involved a not disappointing team, right? Just like the Emerald Nut Bowl, just like the Las Vegas Bowl, just like the Silicon Valley Classic, all losses, I might add. Those were dreadfully depressing, horrible games, some of which in terribly cold or wet environments, just absolute hell inflicted on UCLA fans that were, you know, dumb enough or loyal enough to trek out to these bowl games. This LA Bowl, you know, for a minor league bowl, this is a nice little, you know, a nice soft landing for Bruin fans. And so it was good to be able to take advantage of it, right? And I do enjoy it for that. So just to wrap up the second half, though, the Bruins outscore the Broncos 28-6. They have 336 yards compared to 130 for the Broncos, 179 yards rushing to 89 for the Broncos, 157 yards passing, 41 for the Broncos, and even the penalty situation turned around to a degree, right? Instead of being 8-0 in favor of the Bruins on penalties, they both had 4 penalties for 25 yards in the second half. So that was nice to see that kind of cleared up as well. Bruins 71% on third downs in the second half after being 17% in the first half. So it just really was a complete turnaround. 6.4 yards per play in the first half turned into 9.1 yards per play in the second half. And they held the Broncos to just 5.2 yards per play in the second half, which is very good. And for the game, I want to say that ended up being somewhere in the neighborhood at, like, you know, 5.5 yards per play. So really just a complete turnaround, and really it was due to them having their best players available on the field for the majority of the second half. And it really is no simpler than that. All of a sudden, the Bruins end up having a nice game against a pretty decent team, but still a Mountain West team that they have distinct advantages over. And gee whiz, they didn't underperform. And what a relief that was.
Fight, fight, fight!
All right, let's get to the ballers for the game, the LA Bowl, hosted by Gronk. Number one, also, before I forget, I apologize if there's some background noise here. It is Sunday, which is laundry day, and we had like 18 loads of laundry to do. So if you hear a little rumble in the background, it's either my washer or my dryer. So I apologize for bringing down the sound quality of this particular episode of the What's Bruin Show. But ballers, it's got to start first and foremost with one Ethan Garbers, doesn't it?
Just a baller, man.
The young man came in relief, second half only, and dropped a whole bunch of stats. 9 for 12, 152 yards, 3 touchdowns, 71%. Also, he added in 3 rushes for 38 yards for a 12.7 average, and activated the offense, made it fully operational. So Ethan Garbers, I want to say he got to wear the chain after the game. I don't know if that was like an offensive player of the game or what, but showed great leadership, and even after the game, talked about how he's coming back to UCLA next year. So presumably your starting quarterback for your 2024 Big Ten-bound UCLA Bruins, it's Ethan Garbers, for better or for worse. So we got that going for us. And as Chip Kelly said, Merry Christmas. On offense as well, we got to talk about J. Michael Sturdivant and Kyle Ford, who we've been waiting since the preseason to see these guys ball out, but to one degree or another, they did. Both scoring touchdowns this week for the Bruins.
He's just a baller, man.
Ford had 5 for 33, and a couple of those were some important conversions. J. Mike had the big, long 41-yard touchdown that is something that we had been waiting for all year when Garbers was a quarterback, was a long strike down the field. And he connected with J. Mike on that one. And J. Mike, he just kind of put it up there. J. Mike had to kind of adjust in the air, made a great correction in the end zone to catch that one. But it was terrific. It showed off what Sturdivant can do. And we need more of that. Ended up with four receptions for 142 yards, the one touchdown. And it just was, it was terrific to see them both out there balling out. Very thankful for that. Hudson Happermill had the one touchdown where he had to make a nice adjustment was like wide open in the end zone.
Straight baller.
And Colin Schley just flipped him a pass. And it leads us to Colin Schley, man. You know what? He went out of the game. He certainly is not a starting quarterback for the Bruins, but he showed over and over again this year that he was a change of pace guy that is well worth it to have on your roster. And he showed that with two big 50-yard runs today. Ends up with seven rushes for 127 yards before he gets hurt. And, you know, I like Colin Schley. I've been a fan of him all year long. And all I can say is, you know, what if Colin Schley had ran the option instead of Dante Moore against Utah early in the year? Think it would have been a different game? What if Colin Schley had just had this kind of pinch hitter sort of role in all of these games? Like, I think, you know, the way that he was used sometimes, it seemed like there was no other way that Chip could envision it, and yet it didn't play out that way. But Schley, I'm glad you got some run in this game, and I'm glad that, you know, hopefully you're not dinged up too bad.
Just a baller, man.
But in some moments you did ball out, and we appreciate your help there. Hopefully 2024 will be a year, if you're back, where you can be kind of like that change-up pitch that will be effective against the Big Ten defenses. We shall see. T.J. Harden ended up with over 100 yards, the second leading rusher on the team behind Schley, 20 for 105 for a 5.3 average. And Harden My Heart certainly did not disappoint. Ends up with two touchdowns on the day, and so he had to carry most of the load without Steele being in this game.
Straight baller.
And we still know what happened with that. But Adkins ends up cleaning up a little bit at the end in some mop-up duty, but a great game for Harden as well, especially, you know, for all of these Bruins, especially in the second half. We could say that for a lot of these dudes. On the defensive side of the ball, I think we have to start with Darius Muasau.
Just a baller, man.
Ends up with 11 tackles, 2.5 tackles for a loss. Just a great game. It seemed like he was all around the ball the entire game. The Murphy twins are ballers as well.
Straight baller.
Grace ends up with 8 freaking tackles, 1 sack. Gabriel ends up with a sack and a tackle. And they were fired up through the whole game. Towards the end of the game, once the defense kind of was playing with a little more motion, it seemed like they were yelling at each other on the sideline, and it was pretty fun to watch those two guys get after it. Kenny Churchwell ends up with 7 tackles, playing his last game as a Bruin, as well as Alex Johnson getting an interception. The defensive backs, certainly they didn't have a whole lot of challenges with this Boise State offense, but they played well.
He's just a baller, man.
And made some great plays. And that pick from Alex Johnson was certainly pretty terrific. We really love to see that. In the middle, the big guys, Jay Toya, Williams, they, to me, like, I was watching them like kind of specifically throughout the game, even the first half, and they were fired up through the whole game, and they were a big part of why Boise State was settling for field goals. So they're both
straight ballers,
and really appreciate that. So overall, the defense, like I said, they gave up 22 points to Boise State. One of them was like a junk play in the second half. The only second half points they gave up with, to me, was kind of like a freakish play, whatever. But certainly they played well enough to keep the Bruins in the game in the first half, even despite, you know, you could tell that emotionally they were starting to drag. And then when the Bruin offense held up its end of the bargain, they played really, really well, you know, and so that's even without some of their biggest guns out there. So we will see where this team ends up landing next year, as far as like the, you know, who's still left on the team. I think that's still a big question mark, but that's something that we will talk about later on. For now, this particular version of these Bruins won their bowl game. They underachieved throughout the year. There were games that they let go that they shouldn't let go. But for this day only, we should be really happy with the performance and how they played out there. And I thought that they all acquitted themselves well. And let's go Bruins. With that being said,
UCLA, UCLA, fight, fight, fight.
So now coming out of this season, it is complete. The Bruins end up, 8-5 with this bowl game win. As Chip Kelly was very quick to point out, this is the only like once in a while that the Bruins have had three straight 8-win seasons. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But this is the final chapter for the 2023 UCLA football season, and I don't think it can be categorized as anything but an overall general disappointment, right? I don't think anybody would say otherwise that isn't getting paid by UCLA or trying to make it shinier than it is. There's no real way around it, because no matter how you look at the schedule, they dropped games that they had no business dropping, and that substantially damaged the goals for the season, at which they were in no way contending towards the end of the season for the final Pac-12 title, and that should be what the goal is at the beginning of every season. Something that I get frustrated with regularly is trying to say that we're the Bruins or whatever, you're rooting for a national champion ship level team, and to me that shouldn't be the goal that you're kind of chasing after at the beginning of any season, especially with something as silly as college football, where it's so many teams competing for just one final crown, and especially with the playoff, where there's so many things out of your control anyway. You could go undefeated in a major conference and get left out because of dumb politics and the money and the networks involved. My apologies to Alabama, but he shouldn't be there this year, even though it ends up being a boon for the Godfather. So really, just the thing you should always be rooting for is for your team to be in contention and to try to win whatever conference title they're in. And then from there, everything can kind of take care of itself. I mean, look at Boise State. They're real happy with their season. They end up going 7-6 or whatever. But they won their conference, for goodness sakes, because some things cracked out at the end, and they were able to seize an opportunity even after in a season when they fired their coach, right? So, they lost the LA Bowl. I'm sure they're not super thrilled about that, but they're a conference champion in the Mountain West. So, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at from them. And the Bruins, if they had somehow managed to be, a conference champion with a crappy record, which there's been Pac-12 champions that have had crappy records at the end of the season, that would have been, even that would have been something to celebrate. But this year was a year in which there were a lot of good teams in the Pac-12, and the eventual winner ends up being undefeated and going to the playoff, for goodness sakes. And the Bruins were nowhere near that. And that's the problem. They were nowhere near that during a season when they really didn't have any of the big guns on their schedule, too, right? They didn't play Washington, they didn't play Oregon, and they still ended up 7-5 in the regular season. That is not cool, and that's not going to get it done. And so when we look back at this season as a whole, I think we can now very clearly, especially based on the results of it, very clearly say that it was a mistake to bring Dante Moore onto campus. We were asking ourselves, the answer to that should have been no. We were asking ourselves, do we want more, more, more? And the answer should have been no. We really shouldn't have wanted that. But it's hard to turn your backs to the second best recruit in school history, right? It's hard not to say, oh yeah, give him the bag, give him whatever he wants before he's even played a down, and then get him out on the field. And look, we were all fooled. Like, I don't care, at the beginning of the season, there were some people saying, yeah, he's the future, give him the shot, let him go out there and play, see how it is, see how it goes. And there were some that were like, no, let's let even the Garbers have the ball and let him have it for the year. And after the first three games, Moore was playing well enough to justify, and to where you could see it. You're like, oh man, look at all that potential there. And it really looked good, but it was fool's gold. He was not ready to play major college football. He was not ready to play impact all play. And that's just, that ends up being a real bad turning point that I don't think any of us could see coming. Because if you would have quizzed us after the third game of the season, it would have been absolutely unanimous. Just like at the end of the season, it was unanimous pretty much that everybody's like, I think we're done with Chip. Well, after game three, it was unanimous that we're like, give us more, more, more. How do you like it? How do you like it? Right? And it turned out to be the wrong decision. So imagine what would happen for this team probably if Garbers didn't have the pressure turned up on him in game one, if he was able just to play a normal three-game preseason and kind of work his way through the easy schedule that the Bruins had, right? He's comfortable going into Pac-12 play, right? This season turns out a whole lot differently. And I'm not putting any blame on anyone, because once you have more in the program, it's like that's just kind of the way it worked out, So on one hand, it's like it was the wrong decision. On the other hand, there's no way to see this coming. Everybody wanted more in the program. And then once he got here, everybody wanted to see him play. And that was really bad for Garber's psyche. It was really bad for Garber's to be able to perform that way. And really, the only time it came back around for Garber's to start playing again was after the, you know, the Utah and the Oregon State game and all those games. And then Moore ends up getting benched because he's clearly not ready. And then Garber's gets out there and plays. And it clearly is he was the best quarterback for the Bruins this season as a whole. And even when he got in there later in the season, we were lamenting the fact that he couldn't get the ball down the field. However, I would say that if he's playing all the way through the season, maybe he gets that worked out. We saw in this bowl game, he's able to connect with J. Mike down the field on a play. And if he's got more playing time during the season, well, maybe that works itself out a lot earlier. And now all of a sudden they're using their weapons on the outside, Ford and Sturdivant and everybody else. And it's just a much happier offensive environment. You know, that's not to say that Ethan Garber's is, you know, a fix-it-all problem, because he did have some issues, right? Most notably, it is getting the ball down the field. But if they can fix that, you know, that this would have been a much better Bruin offense overall. Now, that doesn't mean that he would have survived the whole season, you know, and if he gets hurt, then, you know, are you turning to Moore? Are you turning to Justin Martin? You turn into Colin Schley? We saw how non-functional this offense was for the most part with, you know, how limited Schley is and how limited Moore was. So that doesn't mean that this season necessarily turns out better if they can't keep Garber's upright, but the best opportunity for them to have the best season this year would have been with Garber's a quarterback the whole year through, it looks like. Right. And now at the end of it, you know, we all just feel like fools. Right. Moore feels like a fool for coming to UCLA in the first place. And he's like, get me out of here. I'm going back home. Right. And good luck to him and good luck to his mother. I know that she's been sick throughout the season. We wish them well. But you know what? It probably would have been a better fit elsewhere, because you're walking out the door complaining about being developed. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know how fair that is. If you want to complain about something, maybe complain about getting hit so much. Right. That would be a little bit more fair of a criticism. Garber's had to feel like a fool halfway through this year, you know, feeling like he transferred to UCLA thinking he was going to wait DTR out. And then all of a sudden he gets jerked around by, you know, he gets the job kind of pulled out from under him with Moore coming in. That couldn't have felt good. Obviously, he feels a little more steady, it seems now, especially after what Chip and him were saying during the postgame of the LA Bowl. Right. Now, Merry Christmas. Garber's your starting quarterback for 2024. But, you know, is there really? It's kind of funny. I guess we could guarantee that Garber's is going to be the quarterback, because it doesn't seem like there's enough juice for UCLA to haul in a major quarterback at this point. So I guess I would be surprised if they do, and this is a kind of a built-in excuse for why they wouldn't, right? Garber's comes in, saves the LA Bowl, plays really well, and so UCLA doesn't need to go seek a quarterback in the portal. Although, you know, we'll see. I mean, they it does seem like they need a backup that can throw the ball in case of emergency, because it doesn't seem like Schley's going to be able to get that done if he's going to be hanging around. Chip's got to be feeling like a tremendous fool, because he finally gets his defensive problem solved, at least for a year, and then he comes out and his offense is as piss poor as it has been since he first got here, and it's because of the herky-jerky nature of the quarterback. This you know, you can complain all as much as you want about the offensive line, you know, and how many sacks they gave up, but I'm sorry, the offensive line was not the main reason that this team struggled on offense through most of this season. It was just poor quarterback play, regardless of the offensive line. Now, was the offensive line as good as it has been in the past? Absolutely not. Am I concerned about the development of this offensive line? Absolutely I am. You know, it certainly seems like a big loss losing Mike's BFF, Justin Fry, to Ohio State. And it seems like that gap is getting bigger and bigger each year. You know, that remains to be seen. Tim DeRevno is a consummate pro, but, you know, I'm not seeing it right now. And the Bruins did have a problem protecting on the edges. And it wasn't all the line, right? Everybody wants to point to the offensive line all the time whenever there's a sack involved. It's not always that. And, you know, and certainly I would be an offensive line apologist, but certainly the offensive line play isn't where it needs to be. Especially going forward into the next year, especially you want to keep these quarterbacks from getting injured. But at the end of the day, the main problem with this Bruin offense was the quarterback play as a whole. And the way it played out, every time a decision was made, it seemed like it made sense, right, at the time, and it just didn't work out. But it all can go back to, it's kind of like, you know, in the law, you know, when they're trying to decide some sort of point, some sort of issue with the case, they go back to the very, very, you know, the original decision tree. And it's kind of like, you know, getting Dante Moore to come to UCLA was kind of the fruit from the poisonous tree that poisoned the whole thing this year. And I don't think there's really any way around that. And now here we are, and, you know, Moore is gone. The team underachieved as a whole, despite how good the defense was. And we're looking at going into the Big Ten, and there's no buzz for the program, and everybody's kind of, you know, just kind of down in the dumps about it. Now, it could turn around in Big Ten play. You look at the schedule. They might have the same year they had this year, just kind of in reverse. Instead of losing a couple of the games that they were inexplicable, they might win a couple of games that they weren't supposed to. You know, you never know, right? There still is, you know, looking at this game today, or last night, I should say, the LA Bowl on Saturday, this team still has enough talent to beat the teams that they're supposed to beat. And they are more talented than a lot of the teams that are going to be on their schedule, right? And I think that goes for Pac-12 play as well as Big Ten play, right? If they beat the teams on their schedule they were supposed to beat this year, we would have been a lot happier. It was the underachieving that really got us all pissed off. And you could see they go off against a team that's a Mountain West team, that's a pretty good team. And when they're playing right, they kick the shit out of them. That's how it was supposed to look. And why it didn't look that way, that's why we're all kind of incensed about, you know, where the program is right now. And why many people, you know, are hoping that Chip Kelly is gone sooner rather than later. Which brings me to the other point I want to make, and that is, you know, Chip said during the press conference, as I said earlier, that this is only like the third time since the 80s that the Bruins have won 8 games in a row, 3 consecutive seasons, and, you know, and that should be celebrated. And, you know, to a degree, I guess he is right, and that is factually true. However, you know, we have to consider a couple things that maybe take the air out of that little bit of a balloon. Number one, you know, the time that they did it in the 80s was when the Bruins were, no doubt, hands down, a top 25, a top 20, a top 15 team in the country perennially. They went to a bunch of Rose Bowls, won a bunch of Rose Bowls, had the big old long bowl streak during that time. That was, you know, Terry Donahue's heyday and all that. So, you know, let's just throw any comparisons between this Bruin administration and that Bruin administration right out the window, okay? Then what that sets up is a comparison, you know, you're talking about the last, basically this millennia, the 2000s, right, for Bruin football, and this being held out as some sort of benchmark of success relative to where the Bruins have been the last 20, 25 years. And like I said, it is factually true to say this is only the second time the Bruins have won 8 games in 3 consecutive seasons. The other time being Jim Mora's teams from 2012, his first year, to 2015, his fourth year, right? The Bruins finished, what, like with 9 wins, 10 wins, 10 wins, and then I think 9 wins that last season. And other than that, no, there haven't been any of those things. Well, number one, what is not mentioned when we throw that stat out there is how much easier the schedule was for these last 3 Chip Kelly years. It's been unbelievable, the non-con, especially the last 2 years. Obviously, the first year they played LSU, and there's nothing to sneeze at with that schedule. But the last 2 years, they were granted an extra win because they played an FCS team, right? So we kind of got to throw that out the window right there. These were probably the easiest, especially this year. This is probably the easiest schedule that any team, the UCLA Bruins football team, will ever play in their history, right? And if it gets easier than this, then, you know, they should definitely have at least 8 wins and certainly more than 8 wins. So it's frustrating to hear the hullabaloo over the 8 wins. The other part of this, too, is something I know that Kelly has said numerous times. You know, it's important how you finish, right? He talks about that within the context of a game. He talks about that with his teams. And that's a principle that I certainly believe in. It is important how you finish games, seasons, workouts, whatever, right? How you finish is very important. You want to finish strong. And let's look at Chip Kelly's seasons. And this is kind of a hallmark of why everybody is so down on the Kelly era. 2018, 2019, seasons that went nowhere. They were terrible seasons. But even towards the end of the seasons, even, you know, in the middle of those seasons, they showed some life. You know, even in the middle of like the 2019 season, they were in contention for the Pac-12 because they started the non-con 0-3, of course. But then they got back to, like, you know, they had 3 conference wins, and then they finished the season flat on their face. 2018, he finished the season 1-4, right? No getting around that. That was an abomination of a season. They finished with 3 wins. 2019, they finished the season 0-3. The last 3 games were 3 losses, 3 down, right? The 3 games prior to that, they'd won. They'd gotten themselves into contention. And so for the last 6 games of the season, he was 3-3. The last 3 of the 2019 season, 0-3. 2020, that of course was the dumb COVID year, but they finished 0-2 at the end of 2020 and 2-3 in their last 5 games, right? Still well under 500. 2021, that is the only season of the Chip Kelly era the 6 years when they actually finished strong, 3-0. Right, they lost the two games before that. So over the last five, they finished 3-2. But 2021 is the only year in which Chip Kelly's team finished strong. They finished the season 3-0. 2022, it was 1-3. You remember that last year? And then this year, they finished 2-3, and that's with this bowl game. You know, regular season, they finished 1-3. And of course, that involves one of the most embarrassing games in UCLA history, the loss to ASU. That game was absolutely terrible at the Rose Bowl. And then the game to Cal, in which they got their asses kicked and got Gal into a bowl game that they could lose out in Shreveport. Go Bears. Let's compare that to the Mora years. And by the way, two of those 4 years that I'm about to cite, they actually got to their 10 wins. Right, it's inexcusable that Kelly has never gotten to 10 wins here with the Bruins. They were so close, and then he'd have these embarrassing games. But 2012, Mora's first year, that's the worst record that Mora finished with. Of course, they finished 0-4. But let's remember, two of those games were against Stanford. Of course, they always lose those. One of those games was a Pac-12 title game, for goodness sakes. They actually got to the Pac-12 title game that season. So I don't want to hear about the 0-4 they finished with. You know, one was to a hot Baylor team or whatever. You know, that was the last time the Bruins actually finished with some sort of prize in any way, shape, or form. They won the Pac-12 South. You know, big whoop, big deal. But still, it certainly did feel good. Feels a lot better than this year does, didn't it? Right? And that team still finished with a better record than the Bruins team this year. They finished 0-4 and ended up with 9 wins. Okay? They had 9 wins in the regular season. In Mora's first year, mind you, they didn't have to go dig a giant hole for themselves. 2013, 2014, Jim Mora's teams, if you look at their last 6 games and their last 7 games, they finished 5-1 in 2013 and 6-1 in 2014. Do you remember that's the last time that the Bruins, like we were like actually very confident in the Bruins that I feel like, and very confident in where the program was. Gosh, it's a shame. Was Mora anything special? Not really. Doesn't turn out he was. But he was good enough to not screw it up. You talk about finishing, like I said, 5-1. And the only loss they had, they lost to a ranked ASU team in 2013. 2014, 6-1. The only loss they had was to Stanford. And as we know, they always lost to Stanford there. That was during the terrible streak. Gosh, would you trade Jim Mora's Bruins those first few years for another big losing streak to Stanford? I know I would. And this leads me right back around to the point that I'm probably going to be saying over and over again in the offseason, the point that if Kelly would just win the games he's supposed to win at an impressive rate, then you know what? Probably most of us would be a little bit happier with where the program is. And maybe they wouldn't be, you know, storming the office and flying banners, doing all kinds of stuff that just makes everybody look bad. Congratulations, you won 8 games. Guess what? At least one of these seasons, it should have been 10. There's no doubt in anybody's mind, right? This year especially, you look at the games that they lost. Is this program as destitute of talent as some of the naysayest of the naysayers will have you believe? No, I don't think so, right? There are plenty of teams that, you know, that Kelly has played in the last few years that the Bruins had better personnel than, right? If you look at next year and you say that the guys that are on the roster this year are coming back for next year, you know, that all remains to be seen still. But, you know, depending on, you know, if there are any more departures and who they end up adding, you know, this is still a team that can compete at a pretty decent level, I think, you know, in the Big Ten or wherever. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they're ready to compete for any sort of conference titles, which, as we said previously, should be the goal. But, you know, that's also not saying that they are going to be a cellar dweller and not be able to win any games. You know, and I think that's just as ridiculous thinking, right? And so they can kind of just, you know, peter on here at this, you know, this level, right? I guess if the goal next season is to get to 8 wins, I guess if that's what the goal is going to be, you know, 8 wins in Big Ten conference play, I guess that's doable, right? It probably is doable. And, you know, I think we've said it, you know, if you look at just take next season and you know, you look at the schedule, you'd say, yeah, I guess that would be a season in which we would take 8 wins and it would be, you know, kind of a victory. However, you know what? Should that be the season, the goal from year to year? Absolutely not. And you've literally lowered the bar again at UCLA. And will 8 wins get all the fans back into the Rose Bowl after 6 years of chasing them away? No, I don't think so. Is 8 wins going to get you some juice recruiting? I don't think so. The only thing that's going to do that is you actually going out and recruiting, talking about the UCLA staff, right? You know, depending on what Kelly does to fix, you know, to fill in these coaching vacancies, right? Now it's very clear after losing your hot defensive coordinator across town, inexplicably, pretty much, I guess, just because of salary, you know, I guess there's a hard cap on how much the Bruins are going to spend on coaches, which I, you know, we knew before, but I guess it wasn't this, you know, clear and right in our faces. But assuming UCLA football has the budget to replace the coaches that it needs, you could see this team having a decent season next year. But what is going to be enough to turn around the fan base, right? It's going to take more than that. And that's what really is, you know, the hole has been dug so deep that it's going to take something a little more spectacular to get people back on board, because it's happened over and over again. The rug has been pulled back from under our feet too many times. And Kelly can't get away from this 500 record. And it seems like every step forward has at least an equal step back. That's really where it has been. So to wrap it all up, and by the way, I think, you know, this has gone a little bit long, and I have, you know, a family stuff I do need to get to today. So I'm going to do a listener segment for tomorrow, and I'll publish that in a separate podcast, all your calls, and once again, I appreciate you guys calling. But we'll do that in another podcast, and we'll just wrap this up for now. But summarizing today, you know, this is a great day for UCLA football in that they go to a bowl game. That doesn't really mean anything. They got a nice win. Nice comeback, a lot of nice stories, a lot of celebration. It's good for this team, good for these guys in that locker room to be able to feel this. And I'm really happy that I went. It was a fun time out at the LA Bowl at SoFi Stadium. It was a successful event. However, what does it mean for the overall state of UCLA football? I fear not much. And what is it going to take to get the emotion and the energy of this football program turned around? I don't know. As bad as the Chip Kelly era started, right, you could always say that they were kind of inching forward and there was enough things going right to be like, okay, fine, I guess a little bit better than last year, and I guess that you can kind of see how you can spin it into a positive trajectory. But that was not the case this year. This was a huge step back. It was, you know, in a lot of respects, a disaster. And then you look at how the college football landscape is changing and you're like, you know, I don't know. You know, I don't know how you can move forward if you're going to tell me that you're not going to have any fan support and you're not going to be raising a whole lot of money because everybody's frustrated with how the coach is, like, I don't know where you go from here. You know, I still think that Chip Kelly can coach football. I still think he's a good coach. I don't know if it's a workable solution here at UCLA. And maybe he just does keep plugging away and he keeps churning out a couple more 8-win seasons in a row and then eventually he breaks through. I guess that could happen, but it just seems like we're further away from that than we were, you know, a few months ago. And it seems less believable than it was a few months ago. And it's hard to have any sort of feeling about, you know, this taking an uptick until they make a change there. And, you know, this is from somebody who really wants it to work out, really wanted it to work out. And now I just don't see how it will work out. But, you know, whatever. Yeah. We have 9 months to talk about it because, sadly, the UCLA football season is done. And that is a shame. But it does finish with a nice victory at the LA Bowl, and you know, hope you enjoyed it. I will once again come back with some listener calls tomorrow, I believe. We're probably not going to record on Tuesday because I think I'm going to go to the CSUN game at Pauley, you know, the UCLA basketball. So we'll see about that. I don't know. And as far as Mike goes, he made me podcast last week when I didn't want to, so he can suck it as far as podcasting this week. We'll do something at some point, maybe. I don't know. But I will do a listener call show for your calls because I think I got a few calls. I do want to thank you all for listening to the postgame throughout the season. It was fun for me to do, and I will keep doing them next year for sure. And it is fun to get your calls and play those calls after I give my thoughts as well. So I want to thank everybody that participated this year. Like I said, it was an up and down year, but there were some definite highlights. And one of the highlights was being able to talk to you guys and hear from you through your calls. So we will. I'll come back with your calls probably tomorrow. But until the next time that we're together as a show or whatever, thank you very much. Happy holidays to you all, and go Bruins.
Good evening.
Smoke them if you got them.
That was the What's Bruins Show.
Try us tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel.
It's got to be in or out, Mom. In or out. Well, I need the door closed.
Thank you for your cooperation.
Dude, Rob, we play some ball on the West Coast.
The final word is boob.